Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Amber Jones, and the lovely, wonderful Hayden Gullis.
I will take that. I'm feeling good. Just had Saudi Grand Prix. How did you find it?
Saudi, I actually thought it was a really good race because there were so many different elements in that race that made it exciting. Take away P1. I think it was a really good race, and there's so many things that we can break down in this pod, Hayden.
I thought it was incredibly boring. Until Kevin Magnussen stepped up and saved the race for everybody and actually made it quite exciting. Like a 6, 7 out of 10 for me.
Really?
Because of K-Mag.
I just thought there was lots of drama. There's so much going on. I'm definitely going to bring up Lance Stroll hitting the
back. Just gloss over that.
But I think we should start in chronological order.
Okay.
It started off with Gasly out of the race at the start. Yeah. What is going on at Alpine?
Alpine are firmly in the mud. Mm-hmm. He's now 21st. In a 20-driver championship is Pierre Gasly. So he's not going to be happy with that. I mean, my hope for Alpine is that they are doing a McLaren from last season, taking a big hit, changing the philosophy of the car, changing their concept, and then build upon that across the season to get themselves, you know, further up that midfield and maybe even scraping around where McLaren, Mercedes, Aston Martin are. That's got to be, surely got to be their goal. But the problem is, they're making a lot of changes behind the scenes, and it's very much more reactionary to how the car's doing, which obviously isn't great, rather than, okay, we're making all these changes now and we're going to be good at the end of the year. You know, they should have made these changes mid last season, end of last season, to get ready for this season.
Well, that's the problem when you make changes, though. You don't really know how it's going to perform when you get out there. So for them, they're obviously in this now trial and error period. But I saw some memes that were like, Alpine didn't want to be a midfield team anymore, but they were obviously going, they want to be a top end team. They've gone the opposite way. Unfortunate for them. But who's come out on top?
They are top on one table. Just if you reverse it, and then they're good. You know?
Just change it round.
Yeah.
But my eyes are on Haas. Do you know what? People always like to, again, make a meme out of Haas. Who supports Haas, really? I think I'm on my way to supporting
you
Haas.
You support every team.
There's no
team that you don't support.
Well, I'm not backing up Alpine at the minute, so maybe we'll get rid
Hunter.
Of them.
Glory
Honestly,
Hunter.
I just think Haas are doing so well at the minute to be in the positions that they're getting. Unfortunate for Hülkenberg and Quali, but to be in the positions where they thought they were going to be at the bottom end of the grid.
Yeah.
Kevin Magnussen came out, like you said, made that race quite interesting, gets 2 10-second penalties. He's like, I don't care. I'm going to help my teammate. I thought it was fantastic from their side.
If it wasn't for Oliver Behrmann and his debut and the stunning job that he did, Kevin Magnussen is my driver of the day. Because it's that racing driver and team IQ that set them above everybody else. Mm-hmm. Okay, the first penalty wasn't like on purpose. He just had an accident with Albon. Not the greatest of driving. Didn't leave enough room. Maybe didn't think of the wall because it kind of like moves over to the left as they get ready for that left-hander. So Albon obviously can't get as close to the wall driving a straight line. Otherwise, he's just going to drive straight into that wall. So yeah, maybe a bit of that. So he gets that first 10-second and then has to like, okay, cool, we're not scoring points now with Kevin, or we're not scoring high with Kevin. But Hülkenberg's in a good position here after this safety car. I think the one on Tsunoda where he absolutely sent it, cut the corner and kept the position, that is fully tactical.
Yeah.
That is fully, okay, let's just get in front of him and then we hold him up. And it was perfect for Haas because the way their car works is they are incredible in the straights, like phenomenal. So through the sector one, the windy bits, he's just lifting and coasting. He's taking it nice and easy, holding everybody up. And then when they're ready, they're like, okay, cool, we're going to blast past them on the straights. Oh, bye-bye. See you later, everyone. And I think whilst some people may not like it, it's not the fairest way to score points or to beat your rivals, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But it's smart. And in all fairness, I think had he not taken that second 10-second, I think he could have even scored points because he backed them all up, allowed Hülkenberg that free pit stop. Mm-hmm. And as soon as Hülkenberg boxed, he drove away and he actually, you know, I think he still finished 11th or 12th. He still finished 12th with 20 seconds of time penalties.
So he could potentially have been in the points.
I mean, he
that.
Was not lapped in all fairness. So everybody behind him was lapped. So he did get lucky in that sense.
Yeah.
But still finished 12th with a 20-second time penalty. I think he could. I think just with 10 seconds, he could have maybe even fought for points. So Haas, one to watch.
Haas are here to stay. And I think after the whole, you know, Andretti drama and people were like, what do Haas bring to the table? They're showing us now. They are not
dirty
going anywhere.
Tactics, but excitement. That's what they bring.
To be honest, I was watching it with my partner as well, and he's just recently getting into F1. He was like, is that allowed? Like, can they do that? And I was like, technically, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's racing, you know? Yeah, okay, that might not be very sportsmanlike, but yeah. At the same time, he's helping his teammate. So if it's within the rules, mm-hmm. he's fine to do that. But now, Haas were the ones obviously thought they were going to be at the bottom end. Is that now turned into Sauber? A Sauber now. They had a good start, I'd say, in Bahrain. I thought, okay, you know, mm-hmm. Zhou really impressed us. Not so much Bottas because there was a few difficulties within his race. But this race, I thought, wow, I regret putting them in my fantasy F1 team.
I think they need to understand that pit stops are supposed to be short and you don't get any prizes for having the longest pit stops across the year. That DHL fastest pit stop. It's fastest. It's not longest pit stop. That's what they seem to be struggling with. Because, of course, we saw it in Bahrain with Valtteri Bottas. It was like 50 seconds. And then Zhou as well had a massive problem, lost a lot of time. And I was speaking to him and I was asking him, you know, it was a shame for him, but he would have come out of the pits behind that pack behind Magnussen. But I asked him, you know, were you confident that you could get back past them on much fresher tyres? And he was like, yeah. So I think he probably, again, could have finished P11 mm-hmm. in this race had that not happened. Obviously, ifs and buts, he could have been caught up to the back of the train and then overtaking could have been quite difficult for their car. We don't know that and we'll never know that. But at least there was a chance for him to maybe get another P11, which, okay, doesn't really mean too much. Mm-hmm. But this season, the way it's looking like, unless, like we saw, one of the top five teams crashes out, like we saw with Lance, then scoring a point is going to be extremely difficult. The fact that, you know, Nico Hülkenberg is the only one to have scored a point out of those, you know, bottom five teams mm-hmm. means it's going to be tough. So every position counts, even P11s. P11s are going to be very, very important.
Yeah.
So the more of those that you can pick up across the season, if you can't score points, it's going to be vital. So a bit of a shame for them, but I don't think you can put them solely at the bottom. I think it's still Alpine. I think,
unfortunately,
I don't know what they were doing with Bottas' strategy because they pitted him twice. So I don't know what was going on there with Bottas. And then obviously they screwed up with Zhou's pit stop. So I don't think you can really put them bottom, but we're just going to have to wait and see, I think.
Well, I think it's sad to watch them because I thought they were going to be, you know, a solid midfield team. And now it's the Williams, it's obviously Alpine, RB as well. Mm-hmm. Wasn't expecting that.
But they're
them.
All in that mix, I'd say. Yeah, all the five teams are quite equal.
Towards the bottom, mm-hmm. I mean, minus Alpine, obviously, because they are the bottom. But I was expecting to see more as well from RBs. That's why it's nice to see that closer racing. I think mm-hmm. it is much closer than it has been in the last few seasons. But unfortunately, I thought that RB were going to come out on top. We even spoke about them getting podiums at one point.
I know,
That's only if something else
happens.
We were
silly. What fools? How delusional were we?
If the Formula One gods up there can make something happen and get an RB podium.
Yeah.
Because what's going on with Danny Ric at the minute? You know, he's a very loved character.
Yeah.
And we know that he's a strong driver as well. But we're just not seeing that anymore.
I riled up a few Daniel Ricciardo fans over the weekend.
Oh, what did you do?
Well, okay. I always bang on the drum of Yuki Tsunoda. I think he is a very strong talent. Yes, okay, he's a little hot-headed. And the consistency maybe hasn't been there for him over his recent seasons. But in terms of pace, he's really strong. I mean, he basically put Nyck de Vries out of a job because he smashed him across the whole season. Then Ricciardo came in. I don't think Ricciardo really massively impressed over Yuki Tsunoda last season. He had that really strong result in Mexico, but that was it. Mm-hmm. Liam Lawson came in. It was hard to judge between those two because I think Tsunoda had two problems before the race had even started on both occasions for Liam's races. But Liam Lawson was really strong. I think in that team, in all fairness, after these first two races, you know, I think anybody would be in their right mind to say that it should be Tsunoda and Lawson in that car over Ricciardo. But we are only two races in. He did have a really long pit stop under the safety car, but then again, you know, in that Magnussen train, he was able to catch up and then he spun it on his own. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Yuki Tsunoda is laying down that gauntlet once again to be like, look, I'm the number one. If there's anybody who's going to be getting that Red Bull seat next,
it's him.
It's me. Mm-hmm. I wound up some Daniel Ricciardo fans because I tweeted, you know, banging that drum once again, Yuki Tsunoda's beaten Daniel Ricciardo in qualifying. Mm-hmm. And typical Daniel Ricciardo fans, right?
They're going to back him all the way.
It's backing all the way, but it's finding minimal things and looking through all the data. Like, I don't think anyone analyzes data as much as Daniel Ricciardo fans. And I've said this before, there was another guy that I was on a podcast with called Matt Amis. He's a big content creator in this space.
Yeah.
And he, every single time, there was always an excuse of why Daniel had a bad race throughout the McLaren days. And it was always, never his fault. It was something to do with the car or strategy or whatever. Never, ever. So it's just the delusion, which is fair. You back your man. I back it. But It's funny at the end of the day.
I was going to say Hayden kind of sounds like you with Lance Stroll a little bit there.
Hey, I'm still a realist, all right? He's a silly boy. I will own up to when
he's a
silly boy.
Hayden has actually made that statement. Lance Stroll is a silly boy.
He is a silly boy.
Just, like, plaster that everywhere?
He practiced crashing into the wall in FP1 and was like, do you know what? This is a good thing to do.
Let's
I'm going to do it again in the race.
Why? That's the thing now. I think with these drivers, they have lots of fans that back them up. And of course, you know, you're going to support your driver through and through. I always support Grosjean, you know. So let's just...
Did you watch the IndyCar race?
That's a Grosjean bell just
for you. Did you watch the IndyCar race?
P5, Grosjean.
Did you watch it?
I did not watch the IndyCar race.
So fake Grosjean fan.
Grosjean F1 fan and Grosjean cooking fan and Grosjean, you know,
just
anything else.
Other than IndyCar.
Not had the chance to watch IndyCar. But, Hayden, no Grosjean slander though, please.
Sorry.
Let me enjoy
Grosjean. I'm just trying to push you away from the Lance Stroll.
So Lance Stroll, yeah. Back on topic. You're going to back him up. But unfortunate for me, this has shown me again, why has Lance Stroll got that seat?
And it's very
simple. Know a few of the reasons.
He has his father who owns the business. He's contracted for life.
That is the main reason. But let's just take that out. Okay, Lance Stroll, personally, I don't think should be in the Aston Martin. I think he's shown us time and time again, he is a good driver. You wouldn't be in F1 if you're an awful driver. You had to do something to get there, despite your father, you know, having a lot of money, owning teams. But I just don't think he's showing us anymore that he is strong enough to be in F1 because he's making these silly little mistakes. If you did that in practice sessions, how have you again then brought it to the race? And someone, I think, even mentioned it's not him being tired or fatigued. That is a simple driver error. So watching that, I thought, Lance, I can't back you up anymore. I really want to. I love Aston Martin as a team. But when you've got your other driver being P5 and then your second driver out of the race because he made a silly mistake. We see it all the time in F1. Drivers can make mistakes. It's a street circuit. It's tight. It's difficult. But come on, Lance.
It's fair enough. I'm not, you know, hating against anyone who has that opinion. I think when you come with solid reasonings about that, when you look at the pace and the pace difference, and I've always admitted, I've never ever said, oh yeah, Lance Stroll is on Fernando Alonso's level. I've always said that Fernando Alonso is one of the greatest people that we've had in Formula One. And, you know, it's a big teammate to go up against. Lance Stroll versus Sebastian Vettel, there were times that he beat Vettel. Mm-hmm. You know, Vettel, okay, I think he hit his prime very early. And it was only towards the end of last season that he really found that desire for Formula One again and was putting in some really strong performances. For Lance, there are strong performances, yeah. But I think the whole, you know, dad owns the team thing is actually, in all fairness, a hindrance. Because there's not necessarily that pressure to kind of perform well, in a sense.
Yeah,
like, there is the pressure from the fans and you get a lot of hate and a lot of stick. But in terms of like your job's on the line or anything like that, there's not that pressure because you just have this rolling year-on-year contract. You know, you make a mistake, your dad, he might come in and bollock him,
but it's
just more of a father's son.
Tap on the head,
you know,
get back out there.
Rather than you being pulled into the boss's office for a chat. And I do think it is a bit of a hindrance because there are times we see some fantastic performances. Last week, for example, for Bahrain.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like
really
people jump on it very easily when there's a bad performance for Stroll, rather than, and they will forget other performances. Like Bahrain was a great result.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, qualifying, he wasn't on the pace of Alonso. Again, I'm not expecting him to be. Mm-hmm. But he had a great comeback drive, got back into P10, which is where the car was best suited. But then obviously, you know, it's a big mistake. You tap the wall on the inside. Mm-hmm. It's not like he fully drove into it. It's a small tap, but it was enough to wreck the car.
Yeah.
And despite his best efforts, he did try to bring it back to the pits, but it was in the barrier.
Lance, can you bring it back? No, I'm in the wall. That was so funny. That was memed everywhere as well. That was so funny. But I know what you mean now. Now you've said that it is a hindrance for him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he is pushing completely. And I don't think he's taking that relaxed approach, but like you say, there's not that extra pressure of I need to do amazing to stay in F1.
Yeah, I think for him, it's not a case of, like, I think because of it, there's less of that, my desire to be a world champion. Like, everyone on that grid wants to be a world champion. And of course, I feel like he obviously does want to, but he's there basically, you know, his dad is funding his hobby of going racing. That's kind of maybe a bit more of what it seems. And there's great performances that come out of it, but there's also sometimes where it's like, ah, do you know what? We're not that good today. Like qualifying for Lance Stroll, that boy just needs to not qualify because qualifying is his worst part of the weekend. Every single time he's usually at the back, but he seems to do better when he is at the back of the grid. So I think just scrap qualifying, give him the Saturday off and let him just race on Sunday from the back of the grid.
I mean, just chat to his dad, you know, just ask him if that's possible. But Hayden, we should chat about driver of the day,
Matt, Kevin Magnussen.
Kevin Magnussen. No, let's chat about Ollie Bearman, because what a race from him. You know, going from P11 to P7, he was overtaking the greats. You know, he came above Lewis Hamilton in his first race. Points on his first race. Driver of the day. What more could
he expect? 10th in the championship as well.
Exactly.
10th in the championship.
One race he's come in, he's secured 10th. I mean, that must have been an amazing experience for him. Poor Ollie Bearman's dad.
Yeah.
But his dad was in the garage that whole time. Just, yeah, he looked terrified for his poor son.
I don't blame him. Wholesome father and son moment as well between those two after the race. Really strong performance. Mm-hmm. I think, whilst, yes, he's in a Ferrari, and some people might look at, you know, P7 in a Ferrari and be like, oh, you know, Charles Leclerc was third. It's not that great, you know. And I know there's a lot of Lewis Hamilton fans like, well, you know, Lewis was third on his debut. It's like, yeah, okay, that's a great result for Lewis Hamilton. He had a lot of testing prior to the season in that car, and it was a very strong car. Whereas
Ollie
Bearman jumped
in F1
after doing the lap in F2, you know, so he's already got an iron for F2. And the cars are drastically different. There's so much more to get used to. And I think he learned a lot during the race in terms of when to use ERS and being in the dirty air of a car. Because when these guys have... He's done testing before. He's done free practice for Haas last season a couple of times. But it's one thing just doing laps and doing a program. It's another thing when you're racing and you're so close behind someone, you've got a bit of dirty air and you're like... And then you've got to thread the needle between the barriers. So, you know... Put some respect on it. I think it was an incredible, incredible performance from Oliver Bearman.
Well, there's still pressure on him as well, because he knows he's in a Ferrari, like technically you'd think that obviously Sainz would be P3, P4, P5. So in his head, he's thinking, okay, I need to actually get a good position here, because if he doesn't, people are still going to give him the benefit of the doubt, because he wasn't expecting to be in this race. But like you say, they'll still be judging him, the fact that he's in a Ferrari, he should have the pace, he should be out there. I think the fact that he beat Hamilton and Norris just says a million things about how good he is at racing. The overtakes that he was doing, and like you say, each lap we saw him improve. He got better and better and better. No wonder he got drive of the day. And then in quali he was only 0.036 seconds from Hamilton. You know, this boy did not know he was going to be in F1. Jumps in FP3, he's out there. I just think it was a great performance from him.
As I said, I love that he was learning along the way. Overtook Hülkenberg down into the final corner, and then allowed Hülkenberg to get DRS and use his ERS to get back past, and was like, okay, interesting. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to bide my time, and I'm going to get him on the main straight this time, and then I'm going to hold my way in front of him. So it was very nice to see that he was learning his way. And then he was just kind of in no man's land, but it's very easy, as we saw from, and a very experienced, incredible driver, Lance Stroll, how easy it is just to tap a barrier to ruin your race.
He's backing up Lance Stroll again. He's got to get that in there.
It's
physically tiring as well. You know, going from an F2 race to an F1 race, it's
on
completely different.
Especially,
and he did
Jeddah.
Speak about that afterwards, that he was very, you know, it was physically demanding for him afterwards. So that's at play as well. It's not just everything else, in a new car, a new team, all this pressure. Everyone watching him, his poor dad in the garage nearly having a heart attack, all these things are going on, and he still did amazingly. Does that leave a seat open for him potentially in 2025? Is that Haas looking like he could be in there?
It definitely throws his name into the mix. 100% people will be looking at that performance. You know, if people are going to give Nyck de Vries a seat after his performance in the Williams, then people have to give Oliver Bearman a shot. It could still be difficult, though. Haas, whilst they do have that partnership, I don't feel like Gene Haas likes rookie drivers. After having the Schumacher and the Mazepin, and it didn't work out well for them, and it cost them a lot of money, and it cost Schumacher, you know, I think he got better in the 22 season, but he still cost a lot of money in terms of damages. And that's the risk that you are going to run with a rookie. Whilst Oliver Bearman was fantastic, you know, didn't put it into a wall, didn't cause any damages at all for the team. There is still always that risk that when they're a little bit more comfortable and pushing a little bit more, that could happen. So I think Haas is going to be a no. I think that's more likely potentially to be Hülkenberg staying there and Magnussen maybe staying there, or Perez if he's dropped to go to that team, or a more experienced driver. I think that's just what Haas want.
They might be a bit apprehensive at Haas then.
Maybe stakes Sauber, because they also have Ferrari engines, but you know, they've also got Theo Pourchaire waiting in the wing. So there's sadly not enough seats. And there's one easy way to fix this, and that's, of course, allowing
another
additional
team. Why not?
Sadly. But, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't add to the sport at all. There's no reason why the sport would benefit from having an extra team, I guess.
Well, I mean, I like your comment on Haas because I think it is difficult because they're looking obviously at Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hülkenberg right now and going, they're doing great.
Yeah.
So yeah, their contracts end in 2024, but we might as well renew them because it looks like they can bring this team back up. But it is just a shame then for Berman because, I mean, I guess he can wait a little bit longer, but I don't think he'll be in that Ferrari seat anytime soon. It'll be like many, many, many years until Hamilton goes and Leclerc goes and if they bring in someone else before that.
Yeah.
So it'd be a real shame. So F1, if you're listening, here is our bid for an 11th team.
Bring us the 11th
in Andretti.
Team.
Why not?
Make it 12. Like we had 2010. Just have more teams on the grid. Why not?
20. Do you know you what? Know. Let's just bring another 10 teams. Just add that. Why not?
But yeah, I sadly, right now, I don't know where he could go because there's a lot of moving about. There's big rumours at the moment.
Yeah.
Max Verstappen to Mercedes, which could be incredible. We could be in for the silliest of seasons ever because it could be Max Verstappen to Mercedes, Hamilton to Ferrari, Fernando Alonso then moves into Red Bull. And if they want to drop Perez as well, which I don't think they should because Perez is actually doing a really decent job getting the second places, which he needs to do. But if they do, Carlos Sainz then into Red Bull.
Yuki
Tsunoda off to Aston Martin
I
for that Honda partnership.
Fathom, I said this last time on the pod. I can't fathom Max Verstappen going to Mercedes. I just can't see it. I know everyone's talking about it at the minute and potentially in Toto Wolff is like, who wouldn't want Max? But I can't get over that. Why would you go from your winning team that is doing amazingly right now to Mercedes that are not showing any signs of positivity for
everything
maybe 2025?
Everything falls apart in the team management area. Then you might have a successful season in 2025. But when these new regulations come in 2026
is a little bit more appealing.
And who got it right the last time we had engine regulation changes? Mercedes.
Exactly.
So maybe. But somebody else who did also get it right for the engine regulation changes was Lewis Hamilton when he moved to Mercedes. So maybe he knows a bit more about Ferrari's future than Mercedes' future.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows who's going to get it right. But it would be the most exciting silly season
we've ever seen. A bit of spice, I think.
And 2025 would be unreal.
Crazy.
Fernando Alonso finally wins his championship. Or maybe Sergio Perez pips him to it. Who knows?
Now that's a hot take, Hayden.
Let's not be too delusional here.
Yeah. I mean, speaking about Perez, though, obviously he did get a penalty. But the gap between Perez and Max, another thing I can't fathom, Max Verstappen is unfathomable right now.
Yeah, but I think a strong performance still from Perez because he had to overtake Charles Leclerc still, so it wasn't like he was starting right behind Max and then, yes, got the penalty.
Yeah, so it added on a lot of time. But, you know, in Bahrain being 22 seconds, that was the difference.
Yeah.
And then now at Jeddah, and you got 13 seconds.
Eight seconds if you take away the penalty.
Yeah. Minus the penalty, but even 8 seconds. Yeah. Max is just in a league of his own at the minute. And does that make it a little bit disappointing for F1? Because you just know Max is always going to win. Max is always going to beat Perez as well. Mm-hmm. So Perez technically is in a league of his own.
Yeah,
if he just takes Max out of the equation, because then he's the number one driver for
F1. I mean, he was then 10 seconds ahead of Charles Leclerc for third position. And yeah, I mean, we've always had domination in the sport. There's never been an issue. Whilst I watched the Schumacher years as a child, I didn't watch enough of it to really know what it was like in terms of that domination era. But for the Hamilton era, there was a championship battle with Rosberg. You know, it wasn't just Hamilton winning every single race. Rosberg would win races.
Yeah.
And then Bottas would win a few, apart from one season when Ferrari was strong and Vettel was winning races. So across those seasons, we didn't have as much of a domination from one single driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the problem that a lot of F1 fans are kind of having. It's not necessarily, we hate Red Bull dominating. This sucks. This is horrible. Because if Perez was up to standard and up to Max, and, you know, it's not Max's fault that he's an incredible driver.
Gosh,
you can't,
Max.
Can't blame him.
Stop being so good.
But that's the problem there, is that we don't have two drivers fighting it head to head every single week, chopping and changing positions. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Max did come out at the end of the season and did 24-0 it. Like, it
this
could
is what
happen.
We were saying, though, because that's the thing. Even when obviously Hamilton was dominating, Bottas still gave him a run for his money at times. Of course, Hamilton was most likely going to be the winner out of them too. But there were times that even Hamilton became a team player, and if Bottas had pace, he would take a step back and let him go in front and let him get first on the podium. But you just don't see that in Red Bull. And even when, I think it was last year or the year before, when Perez, you know, helped Max, or I mean, he helps him all the time, really, doesn't he? But he helped him in a race. And then when it came to do the opposite of that, Max didn't help Perez. He was like, he needs to catch me. He has to overtake me. I'm not going to move out of his way. So you don't see that really, that the team player going on between the two drivers in Red Bull, whereas he had seen that in other teams. So if we had that, I think it'd make it a bit more interesting. But now, if I was obviously in charge of F1, I would be
scary,
doing something.
What a scary prospect that is.
I know. Get me in charge of F1. We just have Grosjean in all the seats and that's it. No, I think they really should be looking at something, whether it's changing the cost cap again or doing something. I guess the new rules and regulations are coming in 2026, but doing something that might slow down that Red Bull, because I just think it's way too much ahead of the rest of the pack to keep going on like that.
Well, it's not unheard of. I mean, 2020 to 2021, they changed the floor, like a few technical regulations on the floor between season, and that did hinder the Mercedes and allowed us for a close championship battle, which is great. You know, we could potentially see teams get a lot closer in 2025, and then sadly the engine regulations, it always seems to be the way. Every single time, like the year before some sort of big regulation change, everybody gets a lot closer and there's a bit of a championship fight. And then we have these regulation changes, which everyone's like, this is what's going to change up the field and give us close racing. And then one team, fair play, they smash it. They get it spot on and they run away and have an advantage over multiple seasons.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed that doesn't happen in 2026 and it's a bit more chop and change and teams are close together. But who knows? Who knows?
Well, Alonso, in this race, P5, I was actually so annoyed because we did our race predictions, right?
Yeah.
And I thought,
our top four was the same because you keep copying me.
You look at mine, Hayden.
And you basically go, right, okay, Hayden's obviously knows what he's talking about. So
don't you wish
he's
that
incredibly,
was the
he's incredibly smart.
I thought Hayden is now copying me and being a realist. Hayden is now taking my approach. No, I was looking at it, I was seeing the predictions, and I thought, right, okay, Alonso or Russell for P5. Mm-hmm. But then looking at Alonso in quali, normally he qualifies quite well. And then because the Aston Martin doesn't have the pace or something goes wrong in the strategy, he drops down just a little bit.
Same reason I took him out.
Yeah, so I thought he's not going to be P5, maybe P6. So I put Russell then. I thought maybe if they don't have any, you know, power unit issues and they have a strong race, strong strategy, maybe he can take P5. Unfortunately, it was Alonso and I was absolutely fuming but buzzing that he got that P5 because it shows that Aston have the pace.
Yeah, they have good pace. I think last week they just mucked up the strategy.
Yeah.
They held him out for a little bit too long, was trying to go for that one stopper, realised it wasn't the way, went for the two stop in the end and he was just kind of in no man's land. But I think this time, sticking to the right strategy, there's not really any tyre degradation around Jeddah, which I think they need to sort for next season. Mm-hmm. They need to go to softer compounds of tyres. So, you know, one-stop races are boring. Get rid of them. It shouldn't just be a case of, oh, yeah, we can box on lap 6 to hards and everybody can go to the end of the race. That is the most boring way to have a race. Or just have everyone, don't worry about soft, medium hards. Just have everybody on softs and you do as many pit stops as you can to get to
the end.
Well,
I guess, though, with Jeddah, because look at Lance Stroll, you know, these things happen. They know it's a street circuit. They know people are probably going to mess up. They know there's going to be penalties flying about everywhere. So maybe that's the reason.
What, you would have harder compound of tyres?
That they're not bringing in, you know, more, a difference there of the tyres, because then you can do a one stop.
Yeah, but I don't think you should be able to can do a one stop. I think, you know, yes, okay, that safety car comes out early. Those Oliver Behrman on the softs is, oh, this is a perfect opportunity for me to pit. But I'm going to have to pit again later on because hard tyres definitely aren't going to make it. You know, so definitely make that into what has to be a two-stop strategy rather than a one-stop.
I mean, speaking of strategy, McLaren didn't really do well with Lando Norris. However, Lando Norris came out at the end and did say he was happy for the team because obviously Piastri came out and got P4. Unfortunately, his strategy just went a little bit ski-whiff. Is that the saying? Ski-whiff? I'm going to go with that. I'm running with it. Ski-whiff? Yeah, we're running with it. They got his strategy wrong. That's what we're going with.
He smashed his strategy, to be fair, because he said in the interviews after qualifying, what does he need to do to get further up the field? And he jokingly said he needs to jump start. And that's exactly what he did. I don't know how he got away with it. His tyres must have been like 1 millimetre still on that white line, because to me on the onboards, it looked like he was over. He definitely was looking in the interviews after just like, I don't know how I got away with that either. Yeah. But they rolled the dice. Sometimes you can roll the dice, and if a later safety car came out, they would have boxed the softs. Everybody would have boxed the softs, and they would have been laughing. They would be like, look at this, we smashed it, we're in P4.
Yeah.
And they would have been in a really, really good position. But sadly, it didn't go that way for them. And that's just the way it goes. Sometimes when you roll the dice on strategy, it can go your way, and sometimes it will go the other way.
Well, that's the thing. You just don't know what's going to happen. But it was great to see Piastri and Hamilton. I'm loving these Piastri-Hamilton battles because, you know, you've got Lewis Hamilton, the GOAT, against Oscar Piastri, new to F1. And it's amazing to see them two go head-to-head. I think the McLaren and the Mercedes are quite similar, you know, in terms of where they are in the order
similar
of all
pace,
the F1 cars.
Different cars. The McLaren, very good through the corners. Sector one, it shot off. Mm-hmm. It got like a second clear. But then the Mercedes, lightning quick on the straights, caught Oscar back up. But it was just unable to get close enough to make that overtake because, you know, Oscar was so quick through the corners. Mm-hmm. Or, no, sorry, Lando was so quick through the corners. They kind of switched, didn't they? They switched around. Oscar couldn't overtake Hamilton because he was so quick in a straight line.
Yeah.
And then Hamilton couldn't overtake Norris because he was so quick through the corners that when they got to the straights, he could only get close, but not close enough to overtake.
I'm just loving those battles. However, halfway through, it did confuse me. So I don't know if you saw it. They were talking about the McLaren, obviously, Hamilton and Piastri having a little battle there. Next minute, the McLaren was red.
Yeah, there's one camera. Every single
camera
track
two,
we go
apparently.
To, there's one camera that is, they just bump up the saturation. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the McLaren's a Ferrari. Like, I don't understand
why
they bumped that one camera up.
They were like, and here comes Oscar Piastri. And I thought, that's not Oscar Piastri.
I quite like it though, because now I look out for it. Every single track we go to, I'm like, right, where's the camera? Which one's it set?
Someone
I remember Canada.
Needs to fix those settings.
Canada was last corner. The Wall of Champions, it was that one. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I can't remember from other circuits. But yeah, look out for it. When we go to Australia, there'll be one camera and that McLaren will be red.
I actually thought it looked quite nice. You know, maybe if they want to copy Ferrari, get into it. Why not? Okay, so what are you rating out of 10 the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, Hayden?
7.
Okay.
I think Kevin Magnussen saved it. Otherwise, it would have been a 3-4. But Kevin Magnussen saved that race. That fight for 12 was good fun.
Okay, yeah, I could take that. I think I'm going to give it an 8.5. Oh, no, I'm not allowed 0.5.
No,
I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to give it 8. It wasn't a 9. Right. I actually thought it was really interesting. I thought there were so many different variables in that that made it interesting. So for me, it's an 8. I'd say so.
One quick thing before we get on to hot takes of the week, I think we should talk about. F1 Academy started this weekend. And I actually really enjoy it. Dorian Pin, very strong performance from her. Was lightning quick. But Abby Pullin was hot on her heels. Qualifying, though, you know, 7 tenths clear for Pin was very, very strong qualifying performance. But Abby Pullin in the race was, you know, pretty much there or thereabouts. Pin won the first race.
Yeah.
Won the second race.
But unfortunately.
Twice won the second race.
Yeah.
Because she went round again, took the checkered flag twice. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a bit unfortunate because I think the light panel kind of hides the checkered flag. So it was difficult to see. And then the team were too busy celebrating. They didn't really get on the radio to tell her, oh, by the way,
the race is done.
So, and there was apparently problems with the radio, but then there wasn't problems with the radio. So I don't really know what to look into that. So she did get a penalty. Mm-hmm. 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. But I think this makes this championship exciting because I think Pin was going to dominate, I think. But Abby Pullin was going to be very close, could pick up wins, but was mainly going to be finishing in second place quite a lot of the time. But now Pin is down on 32 points and Abby Pullin's up there on 44.
It keeps it interesting, like you say, because you've got two different race winners there instead of having, you know, one person dominating like you're going to see in F1 with Max dominating. So, I mean, congratulations to both of them. It was a great race. It was lovely to see Lewis as well go over to them and give them a hug and support F1 Academy. So that's amazing. If we can get more drivers supporting F1 Academy. But like you say, the race was interesting. Congratulations to Abby Pulling, who we did see in one of our videos in the week at Team Sport.
You're only a little bit behind her as well, Carson. Yeah, so we need to get you on this grid.
F1 Academy, if you want me there, I am there. Sign me up. I've already had the tuition from Abby Pulling. No, it's great to have F1 Academy now because you need to get females in those, you know, higher levels of racing.
Yeah. Yeah,
without that, it's a little bit more difficult. If they can have a race that's supported by F1 at F1 weekends, there's people talking about it then. There's people going there to watch the F1 and they watch the F1 Academy races. So it's a win-win situation for all, really.
Yeah, and it was great to see that it was on free to watch. You could watch on YouTube live streams for free, which was great. And I think there's a lot of backlash in terms of the ability and the pace that it's not really close. Obviously, you had Pin 7 tenths clear in qualifying and then the gaps were going down to like 2 seconds. I don't necessarily think that F1 Academy, the same way W Series is, you know, it's going to be the closest contest because the pool of drivers you have to pick from isn't like you have of male drivers. You know, male drivers, one in a million could make that to Formula One, but you have a million boys to pick from who are doing karting. Whereas you look at how many women are in karting and how many girls are in karting, and the pool to pick from is so small that you're not always going to have, you know, 10 Dorian Pins fighting for the championship. But this is a way to inspire the next generation.
Yeah.
Those who are 5 years old will watch this on YouTube and be like, I want to go karting. And then they go off karting. And then we could potentially see in 10 years' time, 10 Dorian Pins fighting for the championship. Mm-hmm. And one of them could, of course, make it to Formula One. So I'm really excited to see how this can really inspire.
Yeah, because people. It is more to help them develop. Mm-hmm. You know, it's maybe we're not going to see super close racing, but it is to just help drivers come in from grassroots levels, work their way up, you know, get into F1 Academy, train them up in F1 Academy. You know, you might not win loads of races. You might not get loads of podiums if you are drivers in the races. But it's just there to help you. And then hopefully, you know, the top drivers will then, like you say, move into F1, move into different series, different categories of motor racing. So it's a win-win situation, really. I'm so happy to see something like F1 Academy on there. Because like you say, it's going to inspire so many girls. And it inspires people in media or engineering or wherever. It's not just the racing. It's anyone, any woman in motorsport, it's going to inspire.
It's opened up so many jobs for so many great women in the motorsport paddock, other than just drivers as well. So it's great to see. And yeah, the racing was thoroughly entertaining. There was chaos in the mid-pack,
we
of course.
That.
We love chaos. It's, it's still very much junior category racing. You know, you see in F2 where, you know, mistakes are more likely and you have these little shunts, these little incidents, and it makes it a little bit more exciting. But you also have some really great overtakes in that midfield pack. And yeah, if you haven't already watched it, next race is 3rd to 5th of May, same weekend as the Miami GP. And hopefully, again, it will be free to air on YouTube. So yeah, I'm going to be there watching it, and I hope everyone is as well.
Super exciting. Don't miss out. It's the favourite segment of the week. Let's get into some hot takes. Hayden, are you ready?
I am. Let's get some spice.
So, the first hot take is Alex from the race.
Ooh.
And he says that Daniel Ricciardo should thank Netflix for his job, as it's not his race results keeping him in F1.
That is spicy. And I've already angered a lot of Daniel Ricciardo fans this week, and there's going to be more Daniel Ricciardo fans angry, and they're going to be finding, as I tell you, they're going to break down every piece of his performance and tell you why he deserves a spot in Formula 1. I think he comes with, sometimes with drivers with experience and with that caliber of getting race wins, you look at them and say, yeah, no, there is that performance there. There's that driver there. They've won races. I am now starting to think that with him, and also coming through the Red Bull program, that maybe through Red Bull program, drivers peak too early. We saw it with Sebastian Vettel. He had those four seasons where he dominated the sport, went to Ferrari, was still a very strong driver, but then mistakes started to creep in. And I don't think towards the tail end of his career, okay, yes, he wasn't in a top form in Kai, he was in the Aston, and the Ferrari wasn't that great for his last season. But I don't think we saw the Sebastian Vettel that we saw in his dominating years. And I think it's the same with Ricciardo. He came into Red Bull, like literally, driver of the season 2014. Had they had a car capable of fighting for the championship, I think he actually would have given both Hamilton and Rosberg a run for their money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was very strong against Max Verstappen. I don't think you could easily say Max Verstappen dominated Ricciardo, but I don't think you could have said the other way, that Ricciardo dominated Max Verstappen. But I think now, for the McLaren days, he was strong in Renault. McLaren wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing it again in RB, where Yuki Tsunoda is beating him. And yeah, maybe it is the fact that Netflix
is... So you're agreeing with the statement?
I think potentially, because, you know, Red Bull brought him on part of the team. They brought him back to the family. Of course, they have a good relationship with him and want to get Daniel Ricciardo of old.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also very good in that role to do the jobs that they didn't want Max and Checo doing, you know, in front of the media and being that personality that he is so great at being. Obviously, he wants to be a racing driver, but he is a great personality as well. And I think, you know, he brings with him, like, brands want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's a bit of truth in it. I still think there's a very strong, incredible driver there. We saw in Mexico, and I keep on banging on about Mexico, but it was a fantastic result for him. Mm-hmm. But he needs more of those.
I actually agree, and I don't want to agree. I hear exactly what you're saying, Hayden, because I think he was a strong driver, and he is a strong driver, but unfortunately we don't see it as much anymore, like you've mentioned. So why is he in F1 then? It is because he is very marketable. He will bring the sponsors. The fans love him. He really is, I'd say, a brand's dream, because they know he's going to get all that attention. that's probably the reason. You've got a good driver who's also very marketable. Put that together and there's your components. So maybe that is why he's in it. I don't want to believe that, though. I would counteract that if he was in a different team. If I saw him again in a stronger car...
How many teams does he have to go through now?
But the cars that he's been in previously, you know, they weren't... They
McLaren
were the top end, the top end of the midfield,
McLaren
let's say.
McLaren was the top end of the midfield.
So let's see. Let's Lando put him in a Ferrari.
Him.
Let's put him in a Red Bull.
Okay.
Not Mercedes anymore. Let's put him in a Ferrari or Red Bull. And then I could make a decision accurately on, yeah, he's just in this now because, you know, he's marketable. Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see what he could do in a Red Bull alongside Max in comparison to Checo. Mm-hmm. Or when Max just, you know, wins the championship by the Belgian Grand Prix halfway through the season, or maybe even earlier, then just put Max in the RB, see what you can do. And Daniel Ricciardo versus Checo in the Red Bull to see who's better out of those two. And then we will really
Then we can make a decision.
Because I think Checo's having a very strong start to the season. Yes, okay, he's not winning races, but for me, that's not his job. His job now is to finish second.
He's the number
Every
two driver,
race
so
to finish second.
Okay, what are you rating?
That's
that
spicy.
Hot take.
It's a five. It's spicy. Daniel Ricciardo fans, we've got the engagement this week because I tell you, those Ricciardo fans, they're typing furiously.
Off in the comments.
Their keyboard's on fire. Like that's how fast they're typing right now.
Okay, you're going to give it a five. I'm going to go for a four. You know, there's enough to debate there, but again, there's not enough evidence to make an accurate decision. So I'm going to go for a four. The next hot take is Ferrari need to think of a way of rescinding Hamilton's contract and either keeping signs on or passing the baton to Berman. And that's F1L that sent that in.
Ooh, I think this is someone who loves junior drivers. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of people out there, and that's fair enough. But I don't think you can look at someone who's a seven-time world champion and say, yeah, we need to get rid of his contract, get him out there. I saw this was a couple of, I think maybe it was last season, and I won't name the person who I'm talking about, but I put on my story when Hamilton re-signed, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing news. Everybody loves to see this. And someone's like, no, I don't. He's taking up seats of junior drivers who deserve that seat. I'm like, what do you mean a seven-time world champion doesn't deserve a seat and a junior driver does? So it's one of those things where I don't think you can say, okay, yeah, the season hasn't been great for Hamilton compared to Russell, but... You know, how much of that can you put on your conspiracy theorist hat and say, okay, Mercedes now fully tailored to George Russell. He's the future of the team. Mm-hmm. Lewis Hamilton's going at the end of the season, you know, so they're going to clearly cater a bit more to George. But Hamilton, at the start of any season, he's on snooze mode, right? He's hitting snooze on his alarm. He'll wake up in five races time and then he'll start burning the wick and start, you know, tearing it up a little bit more. But right now he's just snoozing. Let him lie in for a little bit. He'll be back.
P7, P8. That's where he wants to stay for a while. You can't get angry at Hamilton going to Ferrari. That's a great move for F1. You really can't. You know, I think it's going to be really exciting. Yeah, okay, if he takes a bit of a snooze at the start of the season, it's still going to be amazing to see him in that Ferrari. So if anything, it should be other teams that are keeping. Other drivers, I'm not going to name names, but other drivers in there for other reasons.
Don't you look at Aston Martin, you stay away.
No, I never. You know, take out some of those drivers. Yeah, don't take out a seven-time world champion and be angry that he might be taking
the
seat of someone else.
He has the luxury to retire whenever he wants to retire. Same as Fernando Alonso and Max Verstappen. They can retire whenever they want to retire because they deserve it. They deserve to be in that sport as long as they want.
Just take out
like Kimi Räikkönen did.
Some other drivers, you know? That
Kimi Räikkönen for so many years, everyone's like, "Why is he still here? He just wants to go racing. He doesn't really care too much about it." Mm-hmm. He's still had good performances, and he's a world champion. He deserves to be there as long as he wants.
I think they will leave when it's their time, whether it's their decision or if it's the team's decision. Mm-hmm. They will go at the appropriate time if they're a very deserving driver. So, this hot take—it's quite spicy, though, isn't it?
It's
a spicy opinion,
yeah.
I'd say.
It is a spicy opinion. And I think, you know, Carlos Sainz deserves to stay in that Ferrari seat. I back that. You know, he had a very strong start to the season. And you can't say over the seasons that he's had at Ferrari, he's done a bad job because he's pretty much matched Leclerc in terms of points. So I think it's unfortunate there for Sainz. And Ollie Bearman coming in, very strong performance. But, you know, I want to play devil's advocate here. And Nyck de Vries had a very strong performance in the Williams and scored a single point. And look how that turned out for for AlphaTauri when he jumped in as a full-time driver. Mm-hmm. So one performance doesn't necessarily mean you are the greatest driver of all time and you are deserving of a seat. But I do agree that he is deserving of a seat when his time comes. Let him nurture in F2 for a bit. Let him be ready for Formula 1.
Yeah, I was exactly thinking that when you said that, because it doesn't mean just because he's not going to be in the season next year, let's say, it doesn't mean that he's never going to be in F1. So exactly what you've just said, let him have his time in F2, and if he goes to different series in the meantime as well, if he's waiting for an F1 seat, that can happen. And then when that seat's ready, whether it's Ferrari or Haas or a different team, then he'll come in and hopefully we'll see Berman in the season.
So what are we rating that? I'm going with over 4. It's a spicy one. It's not quite as spicy as the Ricciardo one. I don't think as many people are going to be burning their keyboards by typing.
Yeah, I think because I've got like a strong opinion that actually counteracts that, I'm going with a 3. I'm going with a 3. It's spicy, it's debatable, but don't agree. Hayden, it's time for our last hot take. So at the Kyle Deck says, Max going to Merck in 2025 would immediately make F1 the most exciting it has been in decades, maybe ever.
Yes. Fully agree with it. 2025, if that happened, as I said, Max Verstappen to Merck, Fernando Alonso to Red Bull, maybe Sainz to Red Bull as well, replacing Checo. You already know if Red Bull, you know, they're not going to lose their performance, but so you would put them at the top. That means there is definitely a very high chance of a new champion, in the sense of, he's not a new champion, but a different champion from the year before, Fernando Alonso. Watching Fernando Alonso being one of the top teams, you will get the Fernando Alonso mentality of I do not care about anybody else. Gamesmanship is coming out. You know, I'm going to be ruffling some feathers among the grid. And if Mercedes are strong, then you've got Max Verstappen chasing that down. I think it would be really interesting to see Max Verstappen in a car that isn't one of the top teams after he has won those championships. Because obviously we've seen him in Red Bull when he was in a team that wasn't the dominating team. Before, when Mercedes was still dominating, but he wasn't a champion then, and I think there were a few little mistakes every now and again that would creep in, maybe one or two free races. Now we have got the most consistent drive I think we've ever seen, where I don't remember the last mistake I saw Max Verstappen make. Maybe Hungary one season where he overtook Leclerc, then did a 360, and then was just like, well, I'll just overtake Leclerc again. That was the last mistake I'm pretty sure we saw from Max Verstappen.
Well, yeah, because he's even great in wet weather as well. So like, you'd think, okay, maybe when the wet conditions come in, we might see him make mistakes. He's great in the wet.
Yeah.
So Max Verstappen isn't really going to make any mistakes. I think, crazy if he goes to Merck. Like I say, what is going on in the world of F1 if Max Verstappen's going to Mercedes? But it will make it so exciting because, like you say, all the driver swaps that are going to go on, giving other drivers the chance to get in that Red Bull to show, can they actually make the most out of the Red Bull? Or was it just Max? Because, yeah, Perez is obviously doing great, but in comparison, he's way off Max's pace. Yeah. So is it really Max taking control of that car, or is the car, you know, fantastic? Put someone else in there. If they can't control it, then it makes you question Red Bull. Then everyone's looking at Max again to being, oh, he is amazing. Yeah. He's obviously the best driver on the grid. So many questions are going to be flying out of it. I'd love to see that.
Well, you never know. You could jump in Mercedes and then, you know, still be 2 tenths clear in qualifying and, you know, winning races by 22 seconds still. You just don't know until it happens. And I mean, if he were to do that, I think it would definitely solidify the majority of F1 fans to be like, okay, this is really is something special, and it's definitely not the car. There will still be those fans, you know, obviously of Lewis Hamilton fans, be like, no, our driver is the GOAT. And that's fair enough. Fans can have their own opinions. That's the great thing about sport, is that not everybody has the same opinion. Otherwise, we'd all be super boring.
But then if Max goes to Mercedes and he becomes the number one driver.
Yep.
So Russell obviously gets put back to number two if he thought he was going to be number one with Hamilton leaving. So even that creates a whole drama in itself then, because Russell, we have seen at times, can be a little bit, what's the right wording? You know, he's outspoken.
Yeah.
He doesn't like something, he will say it. And he can be hot-headed at times, like any racing driver.
Yeah.
I can be hot-headed
in a very posh way. Oh, crikey blimey.
Very posh way. So even that'll be interesting. So this is a super spicy hot take. I'm going with a 5. I agree completely. Silly season will be in full force if Max makes that move to Merck.
I don't think it's spicy in a sense, because it's fully like, they're just speaking facts. Like, there was no lies spoken in that tweet.
No.
So it's a 3. It's not like super duper spicy. I'm not like, oh my God, damn, this is a
that is spicy
hot take. This is facts. What they're saying is just facts. I'll just go with a one, actually, because they're just speaking facts. This move is going to happen for me. Right. I've already signed, sealed,
stop
and delivered
the
it.
Stop show
in my head.
There, Hayden.
It's
a
gonna
one.
Happen. It's going to happen.
But that is so spicy.
Yeah, but it's spicy because the move is spicy, right? But the consequences of the move that this person is saying is facts. And it's going to happen. I'm now believing it. It's going to happen. Fernando Alonso, Red Bull. And we're going to have a banger in 2025.
Wow.
So I'm going to sleep until then.
Some disagreeing going on here. Let us know in the comments if you agree with me or if you agree with Hayden. And send us in your hot takes. Don't forget to send it in and then we will debate them on the next podcast. Hayden, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you for once again having me on this podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening and watching. We'll see you on the next one.